jetzt ist Frühling für Frauke und Beatrice. Deutschland, wir sind wieder weg.
A comic song about Nazis, not your usual satire, but then comedian Jan Böhmermann does like to shock. This parody 1930s cabaret number compares the new right-wing populist AfD party to Hitler's Nazi party. And that, believe it or not, was one of his less controversial sketches. But now there's a more serious debate in Germany, not just about Nazism, but about anti-Semitism in general. Is anti-Semitism back? And if so, is it coming from the neo-Nazis and the far right, or from somewhere else entirely? I'm Damien McGuinness, and those are the thorny questions we're asking on this week's Stammtisch. Joining me are Andrea Shalal, who was born in Germany to a German family and is American and is senior correspondent in Berlin for Reuters. Bojan Panchevsky is also here. He is Germany correspondent for the Wall Street Journal and is originally from Macedonia. And also with us is DW's Maya Schwader, who is an anchor at Deutsche Welle and is also both German and American and Jewish. But before we get to the serious stuff, you guys, we open with that comic number by Jan Böhmermann. Who can tell me more about that sketch?
I think it's brilliant. it's a German parody of an American parody of Hitler and Nazism. And
the producers by Mel Brooks.
The producers,
of course,
by
yeah.
Mel Brooks, which is sort of one of the ultimate send-ups of Hitler and the Nazis through the eyes of one of the most Jewish things in the world, which is Broadway producers in New York who happens to be Jewish. And then he's taken it and repackaged it as this commentary on the current state of the right wing and the support for the right wing in Germany. I can't think of a better way to send that up, honestly.
Exactly. And the original song was Springtime for Hitler in the film and the Broadway production, the producers. And of course, Böhmermann says Frühling für Frauke. Mm-hmm. Andrea, what's that about?
Well, you know, Frauke Petri is off the charts now because she's sort of gone off into her own party, but she was very small, diminutive leader of the Alternative für Deutschland, the AfD, far-right immigrant party.
It's quite controversial, though, isn't it, to have a song comparing the AfD, which is, you know, a legal party, to the Nazis. Bojan?
Well, you know how what they say here in Germany, Satire darf alles. You know, in satire, you can do anything. So it's not that controversial. I think they do have, in the media, they do have this image of being quite far on the right, and for a good reason. I think some of them are extremely far on the far right. On the other hand, to be the devil's advocate, it's a broad church. You've got some sort of, like, you know, economic liberals and all sorts of people there.
But of course, Böhmermann wasn't the only person to make a satire or a comedy about Hitler or the Nazis. There were quite a few films making fun of the Nazis. I'm going to test your knowledge now, you guys. Because there were quite a few comedies about Hitler or the Nazis. So to get things going, I'm going to play you some music. And you have to try and tell me which film is this. The first one is pretty easy. Okay, what's that?
The Producers.
Very good, Maya. One of your favorite shows. Tell us about that.
It was a movie, and then it was a musical, and now it's a movie again. Produced and written, I believe, also by Mel Brooks, who's one of the greatest Jewish satirists of the modern era. And it was a story of these two schmucks, if I may speak Yiddish, in New York, trying to put on a flop Broadway show. And the flop Broadway show they choose to put on is one called Springtime for Hitler.
Was it controversial?
When the film first came out, it was somewhat controversial.
Yeah,
because
in the 60s, wasn't it?
There had never been anything like this before.
And it was only decades after the
Second
World War.
Exactly. Oh,
the Holocaust
was a very recent memory. There were people who were middle-aged who had been survivors. You didn't do that back then, as far as my knowledge goes.
I'm going to play you the next piece of music. You have to tell me what film this comes from. All right, then, what's that?
The Great Dictator?
Yeah, exactly. But when you guessed it.
When was it made, actually? It was
1940.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. In America, a lot of people were actually quite fond of Hitler, I think, in those days. Certainly Walt Disney and notable figures. I think it was somewhat controversial for him to do that film because America, I think, had not entered the war yet. Of course, like most of his films or all of his films, it's a brilliant masterpiece, an amazing parody. And he got everything right, right? Like the things that we find disgusting or absurd about Hitler now, he kind of highlighted them.
Was Hitler aware of The Great Dictator? Do we know if he ever saw it?
Well, he fancied himself an artist, and he was a big devotee of film.
Yeah,
so he
absolutely.
Loved film.
Yeah,
he knew the power of film, and he must have...
So you're going to presume he knew about it. You guys are certainly doing well with your film knowledge. I'm very impressed so far. Okay, this one is a little bit trickier. Tell me what film this music is from. Any ideas?
Is it Inglourious Bastards?
Ah, no, it's not. That's also a good one, yeah. I'll give you some clues. It's a German film.
Oh, is it Downfall?
No. Comedy, remember? Comedy.
Oh, yeah, comedy.
Oh, is it Er ist zurück or whatever?
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
I forgot about that one.
So, Er ist wieder da.
Er ist wieder da.
Yeah, exactly. So, Look Who's Back in English, I think the original was. Yeah. It was a book and then a film. Yeah. Bojan, tell us about that.
I think it was also a case of the actor being in character while promoting the film kind of in public. So he would just like put on this Hitler kit.
And yeah, it's a story about Hitler waking up in the middle of Berlin, not remembering anything about the past century.
Yeah.
You're doing very well there, you guys. So far, 3 out of 3. Next film. This one is difficult. You recognize the music yourself.
I recognize the music. I'm cycling through comedies in my head that have anything to do with like Jews and Hitler and anything, and I can't. I'm coming up blank right now.
This was a great film. Very good film. I'll give you a clue. It's an Italian film.
Oh, is it La Vita è Bella?
Yes.
Life
is Beautiful. Exactly. Tell us about that film, Maya.
Oh, man. This is one of the first...
I mean, that's even more daring. It's a comedy in a concentration camp.
This is one of the first Italian films I ever saw. It's about a Jewish man who marries a non-Jewish woman, and then fascism comes to power in Italy, and they get sent off to concentration camps, and you see him... He sort of smuggles his son in with him and keeps his son with him, and you see him trying to sort of cover up the reality of the concentration camp from his son.
Great film. You guys did well, though. You got all of those.
Hooray. What do we win?
Beers at the next Stammtisch. Well done.
Yeah.
Okay. But it is a tricky thing, isn't it? Laughing at Hitler and the Nazis. Is there anything you shouldn't laugh at?
I'm really of two minds on this. I mean, having Holocaust survivors in my family, I am a little bit sensitive about this now. But I think it's a different thing to make fun of Hitler and the Nazis. I mean, as we were saying earlier, it's one of the only ways to effectively neuter or castrate.
Or undermine their power.
Or undermine someone who has the people by the throat in that way. Just sort of do an Emperor's New Clothes and say, but look how ridiculous this is.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing in Germany right now that's being discussed is, though, of course, is anti-Semitism on the rise. It's a topic that's being discussed in many countries right now. So France has been shocked by the killing of an 85-year-old Holocaust survivor who was stabbed and burnt to death in her home in Paris. That attack's being treated as anti-Semitic. In the UK, of course, one of the big stories that's been leading the news for days is that the leader of the opposition Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, has allegedly failed to stamp out anti-Semitism in his party. And of course, it's also a big issue here in Germany, since reports broke that a young 7-year-old girl has been harassed and threatened with death by Muslim pupils because she was Jewish. Now, Bojan, you published a piece last weekend that got quite a lot of attention about this story. You talked to quite a few Jewish school pupils here in Germany. What sort of stories did they tell you about anti-Semitism that they'd encountered in school?
In those schools, it's pretty much everywhere the same. If you identify as a Jew, you get in trouble. And that can mean verbal abuse, physical abuse, beatings, death threats, all sorts of horrible things. And it's not just that case. I mean, that case was particularly sort of shocking because she was seven or eight years old.
Yeah. Tell us about that case in particular then.
The abuse started because the girl wasn't an observant Muslim. And then when she told people she was Jewish, then she got the death threats and all.
She was being bullied by other kids, there wasn't she?
She was bullied by the kids. Children. There are schools in Berlin, for example, which have a portion of students from what they call here with a migrant background, meaning the parents may have come from somewhere else, between 70 and 100%. So in
so
those schools,
70% and 100% of pupils in Berlin from, schools are
with migration background, yeah. What they say here, you know, a lot of these kids are from the Middle East and Turkey, because the, you know, Turkey was the traditional country that kind of supplied migration since the 60s, and now, you know, in more recent years, obviously from the Middle East and Africa. I spoke to a number of kids who aged between 12 and 16 who had to change school, some of them six times, because every time they tell someone they're Jewish, it's pretty grim. And Central Council has been talking about this, and now they're really stepping up the rhetoric a little bit. I mean, there was an interview with Josef Schuster, the president of the Central Council, which is the kind
which
of the main Jewish organization, yeah, in Germany. And he said quite clearly he put the blame on the Islamic associations for not stamping out this kind of behavior. He put the blame on the mosques. He quite explicitly said, you know, they get this from the mosques. They get this from their parents. So,
Andrea.
I think anti-Semitism is on the rise in Germany, and it's, of course, reflected in the schools, and it's become a huge issue. It's also one that we have to be careful about, because the roots of anti-Semitism are long and deep in Germany, and they aren't just coming with the migrants that came in 2015. So there is a tendency, I think, to sort of focus on this immediate sort of tip of the iceberg. And of course, the far-right anti-immigrant party, the AfD, is completely instrumentalizing that. It doesn't mean that one doesn't have to address the problem of Muslim anti-Semitism and or anti-Zionism, but it one can't overlook the other deeper roots, I think.
It's nothing to do with the far right. It's to do with these people coming from countries where the state of Israel, first of all, is not recognized. You know, anti-Semitism is part of the state norm in Syria. At school, they learn that the Holocaust is a fraud. It never happened. This is what kids learn at school in Syria. This is what kids learn at school across the region. So these parents are indoctrinated with an ideology which, you know, you could argue it's anti-Zionist or anti-Israel, but, you know, when they come here, they, you know, this spills over into sort of violent incidents against Jewish people who've never been to Israel, who have nothing to do with Israel except being Jewish, right?
There's no separation between
Israel
and
Jewish. And that's the whole thing.
These
people don't separate
problem.
Between Israel, and teachers have problems with these kids. They don't want to learn about the Holocaust. Germany has a long tradition of taking kids to concentration camps for a school trip. And, you know, it's a huge issue on these school trips. It's a huge, I mean, some teachers in some schools are actually skipping those lessons, if you believe it. So they, because they're, you know, the whole class basically, you know, is majority of kids of migrant origin, and they are kind of resisting. They don't want to. And I've heard this from a number of teachers.
Okay,
and
so this
know,
is.
Brian, I think one of the things is you can't just take children to a concentration camp. You can't. It can't be like a one-off thing. You have to start with children when they're really young. I grew up in the States, and in the United States, you know, there's no discussion about the race problematic, right? You know, slavery is sort of something that happened a long time ago. Then there was the nice civil rights movement. Maybe you get a few lessons on that. And then we wonder why there's racism in the United States. You know, it's not possible for one teacher and one school to fix an entire sort of segment of the population, but it's got to be part of it. I don't think you can just throw up your hands. What other instruments does the state have? I think the institutional problem is that Germany has a very decentralized system. It doesn't collect statistics. We don't know how many anti-Semitic incidents there are in states across the country, because each of these statistics is collected in a separate way by each of the states. There is no uniform curriculum in Germany.
That's the big debate right now, isn't it? So how many anti-Semitic attacks are being perpetrated and who is committing them? That's the question, isn't it? We don't really know that much, do we, Andrea?
No, I mean, this is a problem. It has to do with the decentralization. So as part of the coalition agreement, the Conservatives and the SPD agreed to appoint someone who will be responsible for
a commissioner for
against anti-Semitism.
Well, alone that shows how serious the situation is.
And they're going to be appointed in April. So how useful will that be, this new commissioner?
I think it will be extremely useful, and all the Jewish organizations are happy about it. In fact, they've pushed for it. But
there are also calls as well to register for schools to be obliged by law to register all anti-Semitic incidents.
Exactly.
As well.
So to have data, like Andrea said, we don't have data. But again, I'm going back to my original point that in a community of 100,000 or 200,000 tops, you don't need
the country
big data.
In general.
You need to talk to people. And then when you talk to the leaders of the Jewish community, they're pretty explicit where this is coming from. It's coming from the Muslim community. It's not coming from the far-right community. Basically, every perpetrator who's unknown to the police will be registered as far-right. This is an automatic process.
Really?
And it's a complete, there's a bias in the stats. And then you go to, Josef Schuster, who is meant to know something about the Jewish community.
Who's
here.
The
and
leader
he
will, of the
He says,
Jewish
this
community.
Isn't, oh, I don't believe in this.
I mean, I talked to Josef Schuster too, and this is not the message that I got. The American Jewish Committee in Berlin presented this study that was done by Gunter Jekeli, who's at Indiana University. His research showed a huge anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic bias among Muslim migrants. But even he said this is one aspect of the problem.
The American Jewish community told me that 80% of the violent attacks, according to their research, comes from Muslims. So we're, you have to separate between what is anti-Semitic.
That's an estimate for one Jewish organization. I think we can all agree that the stats are not good enough.
Yeah, definitely. No, absolutely. The data is horrible on this.
I mean, we're all useless. Everyone's estimating. So that's one thing the government wants to do: improve the data.
I mean, I think it's very clear that regardless of what the data is, there is a sense, a growing sense of danger and alarm in Germany among Jews. I interviewed a Holocaust survivor who was 85 at the time, and she told me that she, her family fled Germany when she was a child. She has Australian citizenship, and she says, if it gets any worse, I have to go back to Australia because I can't live in a place like this. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it.
Absolutely.
So, if people are not comfortable wearing a Star of David, you have a problem.
They're warned against it, in fact. The official warning is not to wear any Jewish insignia in public because you may be exposed to sort of
that's
violence.
That's
what Josef
Schuster, leader of the Jewish community, says, isn't he? Maya, as a Jewish resident of Germany, of Berlin, how do you feel?
Concerned, in a word. It's especially concerning to hear the, warnings against wearing Jewish insignia. Now, I don't wear Stars of David or anything like that just because I don't. It's just not something that I think about. It reminds me a lot of the whole assimilation debate that is within the Jewish community of how much should we be trying to distinguish ourselves and keep our culture, and how much should we be trying to blend in because of the danger that exists. And when the danger is present, people necessarily... Well, two things will happen. People will either necessarily rebel more or go more into themselves. And either way, you get more targeted because you're thought of being either sneaky and you're trying to get away, or you're standing out too much. I have two citizenships. And when I got German citizenship back in 2013, honestly, it was just sort of an afterthought. It was a, in case anything ever happens, ha 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 ha, that will never happen. And now... I live in Germany and I stay in Germany because when I go back to the States, things are bad there. Anti-Semitic incidents are on the rise in the United States as well. And I'm sure Andrea has the statistics at her fingertips. And I stay in Germany because honestly, I almost feel more protected here. But I ask myself, if I were to get married and have kids here, would I stay in Germany? Would I raise them in Germany? Would I even imbue them with a Jewish identity because of this danger that exists? And then, of course, as soon as you start asking that question, they win.
I think one of the problems, Damien, is that Germany has done a really shitty job of integrating people over many, many decades.
Also a problem.
Italians, Greeks were the first migrants, Turks. We have enormous divisions in the between German society and Turkish society, to the point that well over 60% of Turks who live in Germany supported giving Erdogan more power. So it shows that there is a and this is like second, third generation people who've maintained Turkish citizenship. So for many years, now there is a lot of attention to anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism is on the rise, seems to be on the rise. And it's become problematized because of the mostly Muslim influx of migrants. But what the deeper underlying problem is an unwillingness of German society to see itself as a country of migration, of immigration.
Okay, well, let's tackle that question then. To what extent is this issue, the issue that Bojan has been talking about, has been researching, anti-Semitic acts perpetrated by Muslim migrants or people of migration background, to what extent is that issue being used by the far right and the anti-Islam, anti-migrant AfD to stigmatize Muslims?
I'm sure. Yes. I mean, like yes. Everything, like everything they do. I mean, populism is jumping on the fears of people that exist on actual subjects that are not being tackled by the mainstream, and then they hijack the subjects, and then.
Because yeah, that's exactly, everyone goes, oh, they're speaking the truth.
That's exactly yeah. what's happening. I mean, in France, that happened years ago. I mean, basically, I think, you know, in the light of what you were saying, that Germany is crap at integrating people, I sadly have to agree with you. And now they've taken in like over a million people in just over 2 years. How are they going to integrate these people when they failed to integrate the Turks properly? And the Turks came in to work. You know, it was a state-sponsored program where people were moving into Germany to find, they had jobs, they had the whole infrastructure. Now you've got people coming here seeking asylum who have no job, no language skills. You know, how are they going to integrate these people?
Well, you know, my point is that anti-Semitism is rising. It's hate that's rising. So it's anti-Semitism is a particular concern in Germany, but it's happening in the United States as well. And, you know, we're just talking about the statistics. Anti-Semitic incidents in the United States have surged 57% in 2017. It's the largest year-on-year increase since they began collecting data. So wow. we're, and right. we're, you know, but that is also matched with anti-Muslim sentiment, with Islamophobia. You know, we have to address this.
How are they going to address this now?
Well, let's have a look at what the new German government is doing and talking about anti-Semitism. We've talked about this anti-Semitism czar or commissioner.
Mm-hmm. I think we have to be careful about what we call it because it's really like a czar against.
Yeah, that's true, exactly. It's anti-Semitism.
That's true. The new foreign minister, Heiko Maas, has also been very vocal against anti-Semitism. He says his reason for entering politics was Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. One of his first trips abroad was to Israel. What else is this new government doing? Or what else can this new government do? Can it do anything?
I mean, I think that there's a huge deficit, right? This could have been addressed for many, many years, and it wasn't even problematized.
It's hard to describe in America to people who are not American or Canadian as well, the idea that everyone is from somewhere else. It's just a natural question that you ask people. It's like, so where are you from? It's like, oh, my grandparents were from Norway and my other grandparents were from, you know, Bulgaria or something like that. And it's just the norm. It's just a thing. You're always from somewhere else. And that doesn't exist here. And I found that very interesting when I moved here. The sense that I got from a large portion of society, I should be careful, they don't have this sense of like, people can be German and be from somewhere else. You can speak the language properly. You can be integrated into the culture. You can have gone to German schools, but wear a headscarf and have brown skin or wear a kippah or...
Then you're not
proper
German.
You know, there's still the sense of not proper German, which that in of itself coming from the German society is a large part of the problem, I believe.
And what's the experience you've had then, Maya, being Jewish in Germany compared to being Jewish in the States?
I've never been one of these Jews who's out and proud and always talking about, oh, it's this holiday and that holiday. And here it is really one of those things of, I will not talk about it unless someone specifically asks me. And what I do find here is that people do tend to ask me much more because I look different. I have very light skin and very dark hair and my hair is very curly. And in New York, everyone looks like this. This is like not this is the norm. But in Germany, people, I'll get guesses, everything from Chilean to Russian. And I am always very hesitant to say that I'm Jewish because I just don't know how they're going to react to that. In the States, it's almost never a problem saying you're Jewish. They're like, oh, cool. You know, I went to my friend's Passover Seder the other week. By the way, we are in the middle of Passover right now, and I will kill any of you for a piece of bread right now.
Yeah, so you're observant.
Yes. I do find myself being more tentative. And it honestly isn't anything about the past history of the country, because in my view, Germany as a state has done its reckoning for the Holocaust. And there are people who will disagree with me, but in my view, that's true. It is a question of just, I am in a society that, while on the one hand being more pluralistic, is also more ignorant. And it has a lot to do with Jews not being present where people grow up, and also people not caring and thinking of Jews as this weird other who aren't real, in the way that you sort of think of like celebrities as this weird other who aren't real. You just sort of read about them and you see pictures of them, but you don't really encounter them in real life, so they're not real.
I think there's a lot of like historical fatigue.
People don't want to think about it anymore.
You know, got hammered for so many years about Germany's history, and so part of what is driving the populist movement and the growth of the AfD is just this sense of like so sick of being ashamed of German history, and this is what is
people
want to just move on, and so. That's complicated after you've murdered 6 million people. It's, you know.
Yeah, more than that.
Yeah, you know, more than that, exactly. But, yeah. You know, this is a, you know, it's a complicated thing to move on because you have to do this crazy dance. And I, you know, that's part of it. I mean, part of it is just that, you know, if there is little contact, it's very difficult to even know what to say. And then on top of all of that, is something that I think is probably present in the schools as well, is that people don't have the tools. They don't know. They've never had this conversation, and they don't know what the right thing is to say when someone says something anti-Semitic. Or
they're not aware it's an issue in the first place. They're not aware that some slur that they use or some insult that you give to someone might be based in anti-Semitism because it's just something that they say.
Okay, well, let's look at the situation right now. The Jewish community right now is growing again, isn't it, in Germany? Lots of young Israelis
You're
are
welcome.
Moving to Berlin. Thanks to you, Maya. Well done. Yeah. What's going to happen then with the Jewish community in the future here in Germany?
I would look at France, and I'm quite pessimistic, because in France you have...
Because Jews are leaving France now, aren't they?
40,000 Jews or more have left in just over 10 years, and some of them have literally fled, you know. There's a sense of panic in the Jewish community now, and you know, murders of Jews happen regularly, you know. This just happens. People get murdered for being Jewish. And if France didn't really deal with that, and remember, France doesn't have... Well, you know, the historic burden that we just explained, and France was an empire, so it's meant to be able to deal with people from other cultures and integrate them, but it didn't, you know, it didn't
just
really do it.
Yeah.
Okay, Maya, pessimistic, optimistic about the future of the Jewish community in Germany?
I think I'm a little bit more optimistic than Boyan. I mean, the fact that we just have Israelis moving here, the fact that they're moving here of their own accord for reasons that are not fleeing from somewhere other than just they're looking for a cheap, cool place to live, and Berlin happens to be that right now.
Still.
Check back in about 10 years.
Yeah.
I think that will help mitigate the problem, because the very presence helps. The fact that you see the people there helps, and that they are part of your everyday fabric of your life, and the crowds of people who you see, you'll see the people with kippahs, you'll see the people with Stars of David, you'll just see the people who quote unquote look Jewish.
But they will be in Mitte, you know?
They will be in Mitte. They might not necessarily
well,
be in Mitte.
And then they go to Pankow.
But
so, yeah.
there are signs of hope. There are
Andrea,
signs
yes.
of hope.
You're optimistic.
So we have a good
okay.
like spectrum
yes.
across the table.
Okay,
here.
So there's a Kreuzberg Initiative gegen Antisemitismus. There's an initiative in the sort of really traditionally very Turkish neighborhood of Kreuzberg against anti-Semitism, where Muslim kids are brought, youth are brought together with Jewish kids, and they're working on projects together. Sometimes it has to get really bad before people get galvanized into action, but I think now it's pretty clear to everyone. Having the German government sort of embrace the fact that they need to get on this is a really positive sign. You know, what will happen is that there will be more conversations, more discussion, hopefully more initiatives across traditional boundaries.
It does give me hope when I see, like, Heiko Maas talking very explicitly about
this.
The foreign minister.
Yeah.
You know, again, Israel's another issue, but at least visiting Israel, visiting the Holocaust Memorial, and talking explicitly in Israel about Germany's duty to keep this history alive and keep it present in people's minds.
So
that
the official rhetoric is certainly there, isn't it?
The official rhetoric is certainly there. And I mean, say what you will about official rhetoric. Like, if we've learned anything from Donald Trump being in the president in the U.S., official rhetoric does matter.
So there are reasons for optimism.
Germany was having trouble. What a sad, sad story.
We opened with the German comic song Springtime for the AfD, we could call it. So I think we might as well close with the original 1960s version by Mel Brooks. Maya, you can sing along to that, I think. Springtime for Hitler. Good, good. Which, for anyone who hasn't seen it, is essentially the Nazi Party meets the Muppet Show. Well, that's it for this week. Remember, do subscribe, rate us on your podcast provider. Get in touch with any of us on Twitter as well if you want to join in our ramblings. And listen in next week for more political chit-chat from Berlin.
Well...